Hello and welcome to the Security Talk series. My name is Graham Callidine from the Security Centre of Excellence Group within Microsoft. In this module, we're going to cover the storage access within the Windows Azure platform from a security perspective. In this module of the workshop, we'll cover how to control access to data stored in Windows Azure Storage and SQL Azure, describing the available authentication, authorization, and auditing mechanisms. We'll also cover how to encrypt data stored in Azure to protect against unauthorized disclosure, whether on the wire or persisted in the storage in the cloud. Cloud storage systems like those offered by Microsoft Windows Azure provide the ability to store large amounts of structured or unstructured data in a way that promises high levels of availability, performance, and scalability. However, just as with traditional data storage methods such as SQL-based relational databases, the interfaces to these data storage systems can be exploited by an attacker to gain unauthorized access if they are not used correctly. And that's what we're going to look at now. The Windows Azure Storage Service provides persistent redundant storage in the cloud. The storage services include these fundamental services. Blob service can be used to store any binary information, such as pictures, used in a website, office documents, PDF documents, audio files, etc. Table service allows an application to store arbitrary formatted tabular data. Each row of an Azure table can contain any number of values, and these tables can be very large, up to billions of rows. Queue service. This is generally used for communication between Azure roles and applications rather than the storage of data at rest. A queue contains a list of messages that can be added to or read from. In normal usage, this could be a web role instance writing a message into a queue, describing work to be done, and then a worker role can monitor that queue and act on the messages when they appear. Drives are the latest addition to the Windows Azure Storage Service, providing what appears to the web or worker role to be a persistent local drive, just as you would see in a typical server application. All of these storage options are grouped under a storage account, which can be created under the Azure subscription. And as a subscription itself can have up to 5 storage accounts, and each one of them can contain a number of blobs, tables, queues, and drives. Azure Storage uses the simple RESTful APIs for retrieving and storing data in the blob, tables, or queue storage. When an Azure Storage Service instance is created on the developer portal, 3 serviced endpoints are created, one for each of the blob, the table, and the queue storage. And these have predictable domain names as follows. A blob will be whack account name blob.core.windows.net. A table will be whack account name.table.core.windows.net. And a queue will be whack account name.queue.core.windows.net. Windows Azure Storage has a simple access control model. Each Windows Azure subscription can create one or more storage accounts, and each storage account has 2 secret keys, called the Storage Account Keys, or SAC for short. These are used to control access to all the data in that storage account, and both keys have the same rights. This supports the typical scenario where storage is associated with applications, and those applications have full Windows Azure control over their associated data. Any application that wants to have access to the data in a storage account needs to have the appropriate shared access key. A more sophisticated access control model can be achieved by creating a custom application front end to the storage, giving the application the storage key and letting the application authenticate remote users and even authorize individual storage requests. Each storage account has 2 shared keys generated for it. And these keys must be kept secret, and you should protect them just like you would any other high privileged password. You are given 2 keys to allow for key rollover, because it's recommended that you regenerate these keys on a regular basis, just like you would change your password every n days, for example. Both keys have the same level access to the data as just mentioned, but you typically use the primary key in your service configuration file. When the key needs to be changed, you simply replace the key in the service configuration file and regenerate the primary key, essentially deleting it. This can all be performed via the Windows Azure portal or programmatically using the service management APIs. And of course, all communications for tables using the keys, etc., should be done via SSL. Every RESTful request made against a storage service must be authenticated, unless the request is for a blob or a container resource that has been made available for public or site access. An authenticated request requires two headers, date and authorization. The date header ensures that a request is no older than 15 minutes by the time it reaches the service. This guards against certain security attacks, including replay attacks. All authenticated requests must include the coordinated universal timestamp for a request, and you can specify the timestamp either in the XMS-date header or in a standard HTTP or HTTPS date header. An authenticated request must include the authorization header. If the header is not included, the request is anonymous and may only succeed against a blob or container that is marked for public access or marked for assigned access via a shared access signature. The format of the authorization header is shown here. Either the shared key or shared key light is the name of the authorization scheme that you need to use, where shared key light is used from ADONet or a .NET client. Account name is the name of the account requesting the resource, and the signature is the hash-based message authentication code constructed from the request and computed by using the SHA-256 algorithm and then encoded using Base64 encoding. The signature is based on the headers of the request and the storage access key. So Azure Storage can verify the signature corresponds to a particular request and that it has not been tampered with. Shared key uses a more comprehensive list of headers in the signature, while shared key light uses a reduced set. In addition to the storage account level access control using the storage access key, two other mechanisms support generalized access for blobs. A portion of data in the storage account can be marked as publicly readable, in which case requests to that data are allowed without using the shared key signature. The primary use of this feature is to access non-sensitive data, such as web pages or videos. Another mechanism of accessing the resource is by creating a shared access signature. For example, you may have a video that you want to allow authenticated users access to. Rather than funnel them through your web role, you can mark the blob containing the video as private and then deliver a shared access signature to the client, perhaps in a Silverlight app, given access to the video directly from blob storage. And this enables you to scale out your blob storage. And essentially, the SAS is a URI with all the permissions and access you want to allow for a period of time. This is then signed using the master key, and the client app can use this URI to access the store directly. And the store service simply recreates the URI and the signature and compares the two, and if they match, access is granted. Now we'll look at that in more detail. Before we dig deeper into the shared access signatures, we shall cover the types of access for blobs and containers. Now, by default, a container and any blobs within it may be accessed only by the owner of the storage account. If you want to give anonymous readers access and permissions to the container, you can set the access control list for the container to allow public access. Anonymous users can read blobs within a publicly accessible container without authenticating the request. Container ACLs are specified through the Azure Blob Service RESTful API, and it provides the following options for managing a container access. You have full public read access, and this is where the container and blob data can be read via anonymous request, and clients can enumerate the blobs within the container via the anonymous request, but cannot enumerate containers within the actual storage account itself. Then we have public read access for blobs only, and blob data within this container can be read via anonymous request, but the container data is not available, and clients cannot enumerate the blobs within the container itself. And then there is no read access, where the container and blob data can be read only by the account owner. Shared access signatures permit you to provide access rights to containers and blobs at a more granular level than simply by setting a container's permission for public access. By specifying a shared access signature, you can grant users access to a specific blob or to any blob within a particular container for a certain period of time. You can also dictate what operations a user may perform on a blob that's accessible via a shared access signature, such as read, write, delete, and list. A shared access signature is a set of URL query parameters that incorporates all of the information necessary to grant controlled access to a blob or a container resource. The URL specifies the time interval over which the shared access signature is valid, the permissions that it grants, and the resource that is made available, and the signature that the blob service should use to authenticate the request. The URL is then signed by the storage access key and can then be provided to applications, which can now perform the authorized operations without having to know the shared access key. Additionally, the URL for the shared access signature may reference a container level access policy that provides an additional level of control over a set of signatures, including the ability to modify, revoke access to the resource if necessary. And this will be covered in a later slide. The URL for a shared access signature includes additional components that specify the container or blob to make accessible, the interval over which the shared access signature is valid, the permissions associated with the signature, and any signed identifiers associated with the request and the signature itself. The figure in the slide represents graphically the parts of the shared access signature URL and provides an example of an actual shared access signature. The SAS has two components, the access policy data and a signed signature. The access policy data, which includes the validity period of the SAS, the scope, container or blob, the permissions associated to that object, and any optional reference identifiers to the container level access policy. The signature is made up of the resource name and the access policy data and the shared access key. And a hash machine access code is computed with a SHA-256 algorithm, and then that is encoded by using a Base64 encoding. If a shared access signature has rights that are not intended for the general public, then its access policy should be constructed with at least rights necessary. In addition, a shared access signature should be distributed securely to the intended users using HTTPS. And it should be associated with a container level access policy for the purposes of revocation, and should specify the shortest possible lifetime for the signature. A container level access policy provides an additional level of control over shared access signatures on the server side. Establishing a container level access policy serves to group shared access signatures and to provide additional restrictions for signatures that are bound by the policy. You can use a container level access policy to change the start time, the expiry time, or the permissions for a signature, or to revoke it after it has been issued. A container level access policy gives you greater flexibility in issuing shared access signatures. Instead of specifying the signature's lifetime and permissions on the URL, you can specify these parameters within the access policy, stored as metadata on the container where your signed resource, container or blob resides. To change these parameters for one or more signatures, you can modify the container level access policy rather than reissuing the signatures. You can also quickly revoke the signature by modifying the container level access policy as well. For example, suppose you have issued a shared access signature that's associated with a container level access policy. If you've specified the expiry time within the container level access policy, you can modify the access policy to extend the life of the signature, without having to reissue a new signature. A container level access policy includes a signed identifier, a value that may be up to 64 characters long and must be unique within the container. The value of this signed identifier is specified for the signed identifier field in the URL for the shared access signature. These policies are created using the Blob Service RESTful API, and a maximum of 5 policies can be associated to each container. Now we've covered the Azure storage services, we're going to look at SQL Azure. The SQL Azure database is another storage option available in the Microsoft Cloud. It provides a true relational database service in the cloud. An application using SQL Azure can make use of the most of the standard functionality expected from a full-featured relational database like SQL Server. It includes full tables, indexes, views, stored procedures, triggers, and constraints, etc. Rather than using a RESTful API like the other Azure storage services, SQL Azure is accessed via the Tabular Data Stream, or TDS. The same protocol is used by MySQL Server, operating over port TCP 1433. To help protect the data, SQL Azure Firewall prevents all access to the Your SQL Azure server until you specify which computers have permission. The firewall grants access based on the originating IP address of each request. Initially, all access to your SQL Azure server is blocked by SQL Azure Firewall. Connection attempts originating from the Internet or Windows Azure will not be able to reach your SQL Azure server. In order to begin using SQL Azure Server, you must go to the SQL Azure portal and specify one or more of the firewall settings that enable access to the SQL Azure server. Use the firewall settings to specify which IP addresses from the Internet are allowed and whether or not Windows Azure applications can attempt to connect to your SQL server. In Microsoft SQL Azure Database, when you sign up for the service, the provisioning process creates a SQL Azure server, a database named master, and a login that is the server level principal of your SQL Azure server. That login is similar to a server level principal, SA, for an instance of SQL Server on your premises. The SQL Azure server level principal account always has permission to manage all server level and database level security. In order for logons other than the server level principal to manage server level security, SQL Azure offers two security roles. The login manager role, which in SQL Azure is required in order to create logons, and by default, the SQL Server level principal logon has the login manager role, and of course it can be added to other roles if required. The DB manager role is similar to a DB creator role for an on-premise instance of SQL Server, and it is required in order to create databases. SQL Azure Database supports only SQL Server authentication and does not support Windows authentication. Users must provide login and password credentials every time they connect to SQL Azure. Because some tools implement the tabular data stream, you may need to append the SQL Azure name to the login in the connection stream using the format shown on the slide. That's the logon name at server, using the at symbol to separate the two. Now, to manage the logins in SQL Azure, you need to use the regular commands such as create logon, alter logon, and drop logon statements. Now, only the server level principal logon and members of the login manager role have permission to execute them. You also need to be connected to the master database. And you must use a strong password when creating a logon. And a typical strong password is minimum of eight characters long, has a mixture of letters, numbers, and symbol characters. It's not the name of a command, it's not the name of a person, not the name of a user, do not use the name of the computer, and is changed regularly, and is significantly different from previous passwords. Managing security at the database level in SQL Azure is almost identical to Microsoft SQL Server, with differences only in the parameters available. The database level permissions model in SQL Azure is the same as the on-premise instance of SQL Server. Logins associated to users in the database, users may be part of one or more database roles, and permissions granted to roles or directly to users. The auditing feature, unfortunately, is just not available in the current version of SQL Azure. Currently, the SQL Azure portal is just a logical container for your database. It is not the actual physical server, and your database is likely to be shared with other databases of other customers on the underlying server. Hence, right now, this is why the server-level auditing is not available. Now we will cover data encryption in SQL Azure and the issues associated with it. Developers can use SSL to protect data confidentiality while in transit for data stored in both Windows Azure Storage as well as SQL Azure. SSL encryption is actually mandatory for SQL Azure, and currently there is no support for native encryption in either Windows Azure Storage or SQL Azure itself. Data in Windows Azure Storage is stored in the clear, and there is no option to encrypt that data other than developing your own encryption code. SQL Azure does not currently support the Transparent Data Encryption, or TDE, a feature available in Microsoft SQL Server. And there is also no support for the Data Protection API for persistence of secret data. If a service must encrypt data at rest within Windows Azure, then it needs to encrypt that data off-site and before uploading the encrypted payload to blob storage. This is easily done with AES keys generated on a client machine or elsewhere within the enterprise. Also, developers should not upload the key or any keying material to Windows Azure Storage, regardless of how careful they are about hiding it. If any computer or storage services were compromised, it could lead to the encryption keys being exposed. Developers should also not store private keys associated with certificates in Windows Azure storage either. Instead, upload them through the developer portal and access them via the thumbprint references in the service configuration. Windows Azure will not only store these certificates encrypted at all times, but also securely provision them into the certificate stores of the service's web roles upon boot. Developers should not attempt to store these certificates anywhere on their own, as these actions would constitute as reinventing the protection already supplied by the platform. Sample code that shows you how to install certificates in Windows Azure is available from MSDN. And it is not that Windows Azure does not give you access to the .NET crypto libraries. There is just no safe place to store your keys. Once you put the private key in the cloud, any compromise of storage accounts is going to give them access to their key, access to those keys. And attempting your own key management is also complicated and most likely to be too complex to implement correctly. Use of SSL is specified in the services configuration file, which we'll cover in the next module of the workshop. But we specify the use of SSL in the data connection string setting, and by setting the default endpoint protocol value to HTTPS. And this forces SSL for storage accounts. SQL Azure forces encryption with all client connections, and hence data is secured over the wire. When defining the connection string in SQL Azure, developers should use the following parameters. Encrypt equals true specifies SSL must be used in the connection, and trust server certificate specifies whether the encryption occurs if there is no verifiable certificate. Setting the value to false forces the client to verify the validity of the certificate presented by SQL Azure. And in the next module, we will go into this in great detail. In this module of the workshop, we have covered how to control access to data stored in Windows Azure Storage and SQL Azure, describing the available authentication, authorization, and auditing mechanisms. We have also covered how to encrypt data stored in Azure to protect against unauthorized disclosure, whether on the wire or persisted in storage. Now, in the next module, we will cover secure development practices for Azure.
Check out the Windows Azure subscription options at http://bit.ly/try-windows-azure to find one that works for your business needs.